From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of November 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And then we'll have an extended discussion with Scott Irwin, ag economist from the University of Illinois, about this morning's release by U.S. EPA that it will deny once again a waiver of the RFS requirements that was requested by several states in the union. RFS found that there was not enough harm being done to the economy of the United States at either a state, regional, or national level to implement an RFS waiver or to get rid of the ethanol mandates, at least temporarily. We'll discuss that with Scott Irwin and then take up what that RFS might mean for soybeans and corn in the coming months and years as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby December soft red was down 7.5 cents at $8.38 on its settlement price. July, they're down 8.75 cents at $8.45 and 3/4. The Kansas City hard red down 2.5 cents at $8.99 and 3/4 in the wheat pit. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, a gain today. These are closes and not settlement prices. December contract 7.27 and 3/4, up 6.5. The March 7 cents higher at 732, and the May at 729, up 8.75. July corn at 716 and 3/4, 8 cents higher. September down 1/4 at 627. That's the only loser in some of the nearbys. December contract at 610, if you can call September nearby, that is. 610 for December and the new crop, 3.25 higher for the 2013 harvest month. Soybeans now. January contract, and this is a close as well, 1385, down 17 cents. March at 1368, 16 lower. The May at 1352.5, 9.75 lower. July, 1345, down 9.5, and the August 1323.25, 7.75 cents lower. November beans, $12.65 1/4, down 5.5 cents. Bean meal futures down $5.50. Bean oil, 41 cents lower. Live cattle futures on the day, February contract at $130.25 per 100 pounds, up 65 cents. March futures at 148.12.5, up 52.5, and lean hogs in the Feb at 86.45, 30 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, December contract, $1.22 higher at $86.67 a barrel. The RBOB gasoline at $2.70 0.8, a penny and a tenth higher. And the ethanol at $2.34 1/2. That's a penny higher for the day. The spread between the two is now about 36 0.2 cents to the positive side, and that's good for blending ethanol into the supply. Natural gas at $3.79 is 8 7/10 higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.98 6/10. That's a penny and 2/10 higher. And the gold futures at $1,714.70 on their settlement price, 90 cents higher for the day. The U.S. dollar trading 81.25. That's up 0.17. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, sunny skies, a high of 52 on calm winds. This evening, mostly clear, a low of 32 degrees, light east-northeast winds. And then tomorrow, sunny skies with a high of 52 degrees. And tomorrow we'll have a southwest wind at 5 to 7 miles an hour. On Sunday, sunny skies and a high of 55 degrees. And Sunday evening, we'll go to a low of 37 on partly cloudy skies. Monday, sunny skies and 55 again. And Monday evening, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a low of 42. Tuesday, showers and cloudy, a high of 56. And Tuesday evening, partly cloudy and 41. Wednesday, sunny skies and 58. Wednesday night, clear and 43. And on Thanksgiving Day, mostly sunny and a high near 59 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Jim Angel, Illinois State Water Survey State Climatologist at the Prairie Research Institute.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Are you listening to the closing market report on the 16th day of November? It's time to check the futures markets. On the phone line with us is Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Couple of things, if we can begin. Go through the cattle on feed numbers that were released this afternoon, and then tell me how the USDA or the release of US EPA's denial of the waiver made a reaction, if any, in Chicago from the corn pit.
Okay, on feed, October 1, 97%. Todd, that's probably the number that was most outside. They were close on the top end or top end of the estimates, 97% on feed. Placed at 87%, that was right on the numbers for estimates, lowest placement number for October since the report series began. And then marketing's at 103, again, pretty close to the trade expectations. As far as the EPA numbers, I suspect that the wheat corn spread was probably the feature, and the bean corn spread was the major feature. After those numbers broke, or after that report broke, we saw the wheat lose to the corn and the unwinding of that spread. We saw additional unwinding of the bean corn spread after that report came out as well. So the trade, I don't think, was really willing to go out and buy corn outright. We probably continued to see a situation where they played it safe and kept on spreading, or in this case, probably reverse spreads.
So on the idea that it really wasn't going to make difference too much one way or the other then?
Well, I think the confidence level is really what's at stake here, because there was a report out today that investment bank revenue in commodities has slid 20% from January to September. So investment banks who have invested in commodities have essentially lost a fifth of their value of their investment. And I think this is where the funds continue to play more of a safe game because of all the external features that are going on and the low volatility of the market. So I think that's probably where not a lot of confidence on my part that the corn has a real trend-changing rally potential because of this EPA announcement. We really, I think, need to get, before any real upside above trading range levels is possible, I think we really need to get a low in place for beans first.
In a nutshell, how would you categorize this week in Chicago?
Extremely disappointing, and I think it sets up a seasonal that instead of getting, if I'm right about needing a meal and bean bottom before the rest of the market can heal up, if I'm right about that, then instead of the trade wanting to find a bottom before Thanksgiving, then if we can't come around by Tuesday morning, would be my projection. If we can't come back around by Tuesday morning and take out some of the resistance levels in the beans and the nearby meal, then we're probably looking at a seasonal low closer to December 5th, December 10th time period, and more grinding and mashing of teeth, so to speak.
And anything that producers should look forward to doing at this time? I mean, does it scare you enough that you want to put another piece of the pie in for next year for corn and beans or and wheat or not?
No, not at all. I think that I'm going to stay in the mindset that I'm going to keep off the 13 hedges, because what did happen this week was we did see improving supply-demand fundamentals. EU exports were the best in 2 years. Egypt said they're not going to be calling the Ukraine anymore for wheat bids. The U.S. is expected to get Egyptian business over this weekend. China raised their corn and bean price to pay domestic producers, makes us 20% cheaper at the Gulf of Mexico, and our export inspections were 64 million bushels, and our NOPA crush was the eighth highest. So supply-demand fundamentals continue to improve if you take out the issue of the Ukrainians looking at selling corn to China, and if you take out these nasty cancellations by China of the 10 cargoes we got last night in the beans.
Thank you so much for taking the time. We'll talk to you on Commodity Week.
Okay, sir. Have a good weekend.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois. dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Ag economist from the University of Illinois, Scott Irwin, joined me earlier today to talk a little bit about the release by U.S. EPA that it had denied the waiver and about the RFS.
So U.S. EPA denied this waiver on the merits that it didn't meet the denial properties laid out by Congress. And this is the second time that this has happened.
Yes.
And the denial was made for the same reasons. What were those?
Well, the RFS legislation is as passed by Congress and signed into law by then President Bush has a fairly high standard for economic damage in the sense that the a waiver technically can only be granted if it can be shown in a convincing fashion that the mandates themselves are causing severe economic damage to the economy. Just contributing to it or having caused some economic pain for some parts of the economy is not sufficient under the legal standards set up for waivers.
And the way the USDA outlined that, it was that it needed to be, relatively speaking, statewide in a particular region or a national hardship that was being caused by the RFS.
You know, that's obviously a fuzzy legal standard, but the legal experts in Washington interpret it in more of an obvious national hardship. For example, you know, it reduces gross national product in the United States by 1% or something like that.
Okay. So let's turn your attention a different way. From the ag economist's point of view, from your perspective, whether that waiver had been denied or not, would it have made a difference?
Our analysis was this summer is that it wouldn't have made an iota of difference. And it's interesting this morning, at least so far, the grain markets seem to be agreeing with that reaction. Maybe we'll see some small short-term reaction because of this interesting development in the last 4 or 5 years of how gasoline refiners in the United States have learned to use ethanol to their benefit.
So on the air every day, I read the spot month RBOB mm-hmm. and I read the spot month ethanol mm-hmm. and then I give the spread.
Mm-hmm.
This is because you've told me that as long as that spread is positive, that it's quite likely oil companies, oil refineries will use ethanol to enhance octane.
Exactly.
And it is simply an input into their gasoline supply. And it's economical and the mandate matters not to them too much anymore.
At least in the short run. It's very important that logic holds in the short run, given that the mandates are in place. So the refiners know, okay, we have to use approximately 10% by volume ethanol in whatever gasoline that we blend and produce. So they know that. So given that, they've kind of basically discovered over time that they have changed the way they operate their refineries to produce out of their refineries a lower octane feedstock for making gasoline. And then they blend that with ethanol, which is a relatively high octane feedstock. And you go from basically a conventional 84 octane to an 87 by adding 10% ethanol. And so there are even estimates that the cost of switching back to the old system of basically getting gasoline feedstock directly out of the refineries that's 87 octane would be, in the short run, those switching costs would be high enough that, in fact, you could run the price of ethanol substantially above the price of wholesale RBOB gasoline, and they'd still want to use ethanol.
So, effectively, ethanol, from the oil company's perspective, allows them to use a poor quality feedstock, which means they can have a lower price to begin with on the gasoline supply, and they improve the quality of that feedstock by adding an octane enhancer or ethanol.
I'm not sure I would go quite that far. I don't think that the that we really know fully the answer to that question, because you're basically asking, okay, let's imagine a world where tomorrow the mandates disappear. How would the refiners replace that octane feedstock that they've been getting from ethanol, and how costly would it be to make that switch back to the way they ran their refineries basically pre-2006? And you can get completely opposing views from different people within the petroleum refining industry. We have talked to people who say that is very expensive. It would take 2 or 3 years for that kind of switchover to occur, and it would have a real impact on the price of gasoline. Talk to other people and say, we can restart those parts of our refineries in a few months and go back to the way the system operated at very low cost. So there's real uncertainty on in a no-mandate world what exactly would happen.
So let's say that Congress does not act, does not change the mandate in any way, which is more likely than not at this point, especially because U.S. EPA now has denied twice requests for waivers. What happens with corn and ethanol usage over time, and does corn continue to lead the marketplace in the United States for commodity prices higher?
Excellent question, and intriguingly enough, even though all of the headlines are consumed with the waiver request, which was driven by the drought in corn and corn ethanol use, going forward, because of the blend wall, it looks like corn is going to likely lose its leading role in driving the support for grain and oilseed prices that we've seen. And it's very possible that that could switch to soybeans and biodiesel.
Define the blend wall.
The blend wall is simply the technical requirement that no more than 10% ethanol by volume be mixed within a gallon of retail gasoline.
And it works into the legislation how? Because there is a second requirement in that legislation, or a primary requirement, that at some point will be almost above that blend wall, I believe.
We're basically there now. We're in that process of going above that blend wall. Basically, a little background is when these renewable standards were first developed, we were basically projecting out into the future that the United States would use about 150 billion gallons of motor fuel gasoline. And so 10% is 15 billion gallons. And so you look in 2015, what number do you see for the conventional mandate? 15 billion gallons. Well, what's turned out, we've had a huge recession and we've had high oil prices. People change their behavior. People are driving less and they're driving more fuel efficient cars. So now we're here at about 135 billion gallons of total gasoline use in the United States. So our blend wall is someplace, depending on estimates, around 13.2 to 13.5 billion gallons. And that wasn't anticipated when these mandates were first developed. So now we're entering a period where the mandates are technically larger than the legal limit allows in terms of the total use of ethanol in our motor gasoline supply.
So there is a way that oil companies can meet the mandates and still be within the legal limits.
Exactly.
That's with the RINs.
Well, it's a combination of RINs and sugarcane-based ethanol from Brazil and biodiesel. And so there's a lot of moving parts here, but if I could kind of summarize the way we see it working out going forward is we have something called RINs, which is its own subject, but these are the tradable credits that you use to technically enforce the renewable fuels mandate. And if you've been producing above it, you can hold on to those and use them to meet a future requirement. And so we have a large stock of basically past RINs credits that can be used for a while. We estimate about 2.5 billion gallons of those RINs credits. But for a couple reasons, we project that we will use those up very quickly because, A, you have to use those RINs to meet this gap between the blend wall amount of ethanol and this rising requirement. So that's going to chew them up. And also, as we export, that also effectively means we have to replace anything we export with those RINs values as well. So sometime in 2014 or 2015, we're going to run out of our ability to basically draw on those credits to meet the RFS.
And this is for the gasoline supply, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's for the diesel fuel supply.
Correct. We are nowhere near a blend wall for diesel. So the common blends, you know, run anywhere from B2, B5, B10 to B20. I think the technical limit is 20% biodiesel, if I remember that right. So basically, and the way the RFS is set up is very unique in that we would say it's nested. So it's interesting. The corn-based ethanol can only meet that component of the mandate, so to fulfill it. But there's also what's called advanced undifferentiated ethanol. There's biodiesel, and then there's cellulosic. And there's a hierarchy of these mandates based on their contributions to reducing greenhouse gases. Cellulosic is at the highest. Biodiesel is next. Advanced ethanol is next, and corn-based ethanol is at the bottom. So a gallon of biodiesel can count towards the biodiesel mandate. It can also count towards the what's called the undifferentiated advanced component, and it could also potentially be used to meet the conventional mandate that corn ethanol usually meets.
And when it's used there, it counts as not 1 gallon?
But 1.5, too, because of its supposed extra benefits in terms of reducing greenhouse gases. And so the bottom line is when you get all this through, our analysis indicates that very soon, possibly as early as 2014, so just a little over a year from now, we could be facing a major collision between, under a blend wall, our options for meeting the total renewable fuels mandate standards and realities within world vegetable oil markets. Basically, it means you're to meet this these mandates going forward because of the blend wall and the caps that it puts on ethanol, you either are going to have to pull in massive quantities of ethanol imports from Brazil, which we believe there are limits on that because of their internal policies, or you have to dramatically ramp up biodiesel. That's it. And, you know, we've projected that you, under some scenarios, you might use 60 or 70% of the total vegetable oil and fats and oils supplies available in the United States within a couple years. That can't happen. So that's the real pressure that's going to come to bear on revising the RFS is simply there isn't enough supply to make that much biodiesel and not have, just a consumer revolt because of what it does to vegetable oil prices.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Probably more than you wanted to know about the RFS.
As much as we wanted to know. If you want to hear more from Scott Irwin, you can do that again 1 week from today. I will run this on Friday of next week. I'll be back in 2 minutes with the weather forecast.
It's National Clean Out Your Refrigerator Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1660, Asher Levy from Portugal applied for a license to sell kosher meat. He was the first kosher butcher in New Amsterdam, that's New York. In 1848, John Thorpe died, an American inventor. He created the ring spinning machine. which replaced Samuel Compton's spinning mule in the world's textile mills because of its greater productivity and simplicity. In 1783, Sarah Josephine Baker was born. An American physician, she was a pioneer in public health and child welfare. Among her many contributions, establishment of the Bureau of Child Hygiene and free milk clinics, which in part made the New York City infant mortality rates the lowest of its day in the U.S. or Europe. In 1887, German scientist Carl Gassner was issued a U.S. patent for the first dry cell battery, very much like the carbon-zinc batteries sold today. And in 1967, Elmer McCollum died, an American biochemist. He discovered vitamins A and B and worked with others on vitamin D. He recognized that a healthy diet required certain fats as well as nutrients including calcium, phosphorus, fluorine, manganese, and zinc. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, on the phone line to look at the weather forecast for the weekend and the week ahead. Jim, thanks so much. Looks like we might have some nice days, a little rain, and then a really pretty beautiful week. Is that a good assumption?
That is. It's very nice weather, very mild. Highs this weekend will be in the low 50s and lows around the freezing mark, so probably a little frost on the windshield in the mornings, but lots of sunshine. And there is a chance of rain on Monday night, although the accumulation probably won't be that much. And then the story for the rest of the week is highs in the mid to upper 50s and lows around 40. So just be a really great week for Thanksgiving and doing all that travel and so forth.
It would be fantastic to travel. Thanksgiving Day looks like what?
That's right. Looks Thanksgiving Day itself mostly sunny with a high near 59. And the National Weather Service is calling for at least a 50% chance of afternoon drowsiness after that Thanksgiving dinner. So we'll
good for them. I bet there will be some afternoon drowsiness there. A little turkey, settle in, a nice 59.
Right.
Open the windows and go back to sleep for a while. That'd be fantastic.
Right.
Hey, a lot of people will be traveling back home then on Friday and Saturday. I don't know whether you can get that far extended out. Do those look like good days or bad days?
Well, you know, there was, when I looked at the forecast a little farther out there, there was a chance of rain on about the Friday or Saturday time frame, but still fairly warm temperatures. In fact, that's really the next 2 weeks are expected to be above normal on temperatures and near to below normal on precipitation. So really the next big storm event won't be until sometime next week. So I don't think we'll have anybody at least stranded in Illinois in a snowdrift at this point.
Sounds like a great Thanksgiving week, a good time to travel, maybe a good time to do a little fall cleanup in the yard, too.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks so much, Jim.
Okay, you're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey and serves as the state climatologist from the Prairie Research Institute. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Just a reminder, if you have not yet registered for the Ag Masters program, which comes up the 25th and 6th, I believe, that's Monday and Tuesday of November, right here on the U of I campus at the I Hotel, hit cropsciconferences.com. This is a really good, intensive look at crop sciences and the latest developments and a lot of classroom work. If you're a high-end user, this is one you want to come to. It's at cropsciconferences.com. Registration closes yet today right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus for the Ag Masters program.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria in downtown Champaign. Along with their dinner menu, tapas is served every evening until 2 a.m. Brunch is also served on Saturday and Sunday from 10:30 to 2:30. Information on menus and wine and beer lists is at RadioMariaRestaurant.com.
And that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Thanks for being with us on this Friday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org for Commodity Week. We'll post it there by about 6 o'clock this evening.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.